The Tolkien Road, Episode 246, The Peoples of Middle-Earth. Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to The Tolkien Road, Episode 246. Greta, what's up?
Hey. Jeez, that question always catches me by surprise, and I don't know why. But not a whole lot. Just enjoying the start of summer, you know? The warm days and long nights. It's been nice.
Right on.
How about you? What's up with you?
Sounds about right. Still flummoxed that you can that question takes you by surprise. 246 episodes in.
I know. Maybe you need to come up with a different question.
Well, I like putting you on the spot.
Clearly.
So...
okay.
Maybe you need to just come with a ready-made answer and then at that point I'll be like, wow, that's not as fun to ask that question anymore.
You're right. That's what I'm going to do. You better watch out.
Maybe your response would be like, how dare you ask me, what's up with you? And then I'm like, whoa.
Oh, that put you back scary. On your heels a little bit.
Yeesh.
All right.
On this episode, we are completing our journey through the History of Middle-Earth series as we survey Volume 12, The Peoples of Middle-Earth. Sorry, we're completing our journey. We are continuing, but we are completing our journey on this episode. Before we get started, we'd like to give a shout-out to our patrons. Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, Lise Yu, Andrew T., John R., and Ms. Anonymous. Thank you all so much.
Yes, thank you.
You, too, can become a patron of The Tolkien Road by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Becoming a patron lets you support the show in a tangible way and lands you some awesome perks. And don't forget, you can now make an annual pledge and get 1 month free. All right. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes and other podcasting platforms. Leaving us a 5-star rating and a review helps get the word out about us. By the way, thanks for helping us hit 300 ratings on iTunes. So thanks for those who rated us and put us up to 300 here recently.
That's awesome.
Now that we're at 300, we need your help getting our average rating up from 4.5-ish to 5-ish, right?
Man.
So
you just keep the challenges coming, Johnny.
Well, you know, I think
I'm not complaining.
I think our listeners are the type of people that respond well to a challenge.
I agree. I mean, yes. Most of them have read the Silmarillion, so
that's true.
Enough said.
That's true. And and look, I mean, they've hung with us. If they're listening to this right now, they've hung with us through the History of Middle Earth series. So
right.
Boom.
Sorry.
Yeah.
My bad.
Got it with their giant water bottle here. So
some of us like to stay hydrated, John.
Why couldn't you have just had a nice little glass of water like me, of high quality H2O?
Because like I said, some of us like to stay hydrated.
I like to stay hydrated. I bet I've drank more water.
Yeah, but how many times a day have you had to refill that glass?
Look what you did. Look at that spike right there.
Sorry.
From dropping.
Well, I guess you'll get to put your magnificent editing skills to the test.
Mm-hmm. Now, all of those creatures in A Quiet Place, you know, if they'd heard that, their heads would have exploded.
Well, then I would have been a hero.
Oh, spoiler alert, by the way.
Oh. Well, no, if you hadn't said that, they wouldn't have known it was a spoiler alert.
Just saying.
It's not really a spoiler alert. Yeah. You should still watch it.
Everybody's seen Quiet Place by now, probably.
I hope so. Have they seen the second one, though?
Well, I don't know. Maybe
the second one's the bomb.
Maybe we'll have to ask them and discuss that on our new podcast, A Quiet Place, the podcast.
It's just 60 minutes of silence.
We just talk like this the whole time.
What, do we talk at all, though?
We just talk very quietly, and you have to watch us, and we make silence. Or maybe we, being loudmouths about The Quiet Place, maybe that's the name of our podcast. I don't know.
Anyway. A little lost. But anyway, my apologies for my giant water bottle.
Yeah, well, there go our getting us up to 5 stars-ish. We need your
I bet our listeners will still do it.
We need your help getting us up to 5 stars-ish on iTunes, which means if you are a 5-star kind of person, let the world know. It's super easy, and the negative voices are drowning you out. Don't let them drown you out. So
are they? Are the negative voices?
Well, I'm just saying. Every time somebody leaves a 1-star or a 2-star, it drags the rating down. You know, so we need all of the army of 5-star raters to go on there and make it happen, and then it'll be like, shut up, 1-star person.
We need the Rohirrim of 5-star reviews to show up.
Boom. What Greta said.
Yes.
There you go.
Be the Rohirrim for us, guys. Mm-hmm. Be the Rohirrim.
Mm-hmm. Right. Indeed.
It's my motivational speech for the day.
It's good. That was a good one. That'll win national championships right there. Mm. It's time for the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5 for all those watching us on YouTube. We need to do that first. All right. YouTube. Anyway, sorry.
What is happening?
All right. 3, 2, 1. Whoopsh. All right. Hope you air fived back at us. We feel the love when you do. So.
Yep, we do.
All right. You too can be a part of the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5. Just head on over to YouTube where this episode is posted. And while you're at it, subscribe and click the notify bell for our channel.
I feel like my water bottle drop just really kind of threw a wrench into things.
It really just
screwed
me up.
Got you off, didn't it?
Totally.
Oh, you'll get back there, I'm sure.
Also, we'd love to hear what you think of this episode over there, so leave a comment. I wanted to read this one comment we received since the last episode over on YouTube from Paul Quintana. This is in response to, I believe, episode 243 or 242. And Paul says, "I'm yelling at the screen. You didn't explain the Notion Club papers well enough for Greta, and it is killing me." I'm never going to live that down. So I told Paul that if he listened to the next episode, he'd hear that I did my best and maybe got you understanding it better. But
yeah, maybe it was just an episode too late there, John.
I do apologize, Paul.
Oh, that's so nice that our listeners like care. I wish I could have heard Paul. That they stick up for me.
You guys have no idea, right? You guys like, you know, people leave these comments sometimes where they're like, John's so mean to Greta. And it's just like, you guys have no idea how it is at home. This is my one opportunity. This is my one opportunity to get some shots in on her, because the rest of the time, when the camera's off, when the mic's off, I'm telling y'all,
don't listen to a word he's saying.
It ain't pretty for this guy right here.
Don't listen to a word he's saying. Plus, it's not really fair because you have much more of an audience than I do at home.
What do you mean?
When I'm taking shots at you, like I have max of like 3 people to witness. Well, 3 people and 2 cats.
Yeah, but it's the 3 people that matter most to us in the world. So
okay, yeah. Well,
sorry, so, everybody else, but our kids kind of matter more than you guys do. We love you guys,
but you guys are close second. You're close second. Yeah. Well, thank you, Paul. Thank you for. I wish your voice could have been heard sooner.
Paul, I wish you just seen after that episode was over. You know what she did to me. It was for misexplaining the Notion Club papers. It was awful. So.
He lies.
Right. Thanks, Paul.
He lies.
Hey, leave your comments on our YouTube channel, because we like to read them early, front of the line privileges in the episode.
Skip the line.
That's right. You can also check out the rest of our video library on YouTube, which is already large and growing weekly. I just posted another video that's not a episode video, but it's a short video on the big news from last week. Humongous news, y'all. If you haven't already heard, there's a new Lord of the Rings film coming out. All right. And we're going to talk about it towards the end of the episode and with our news segment. So you got to stick around till then. But it's titled Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim. And my video explains 10 things you need to know about this. So head on over to our YouTube channel and check out that video, Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim, 10 things you need to know. Right. And you're going to find out 10 really cool things about this. So there
Sounds
you go.
Good.
Mm-hmm. And while you're over there, while you're over there, subscribe and click the notify bell. Maybe you should watch it.
Maybe I should watch it.
All right.
I don't know, though. I'm not convinced you're going to explain it very well. So I don't know that I want to waste my time.
Well,
just okay. Saying.
Well,
I mean,
guess you'll just have to wait
Notion
and find out.
Notion Club papers.
I'm going to fix this camera here. It needs to go over a little bit.
Wait, what did you
or maybe,
do?
No. It needs to go back here. There we go. There we go. Now Greta's, I feel like Greta was kind of off center, so.
I don't mind being off.
Because I move it when it's just me because of where I normally sit. So, yeah.
I'm okay with being off center. Just FYI. No, I think I will watch it. I think I will, because I want to know about the movie.
Yeah, it's going to be. I am pretty excited about this one. So,
cool.
Yeah. So, we're going to talk about the news at the end. So, we'll save it all for then. I want to jump in because I'm pretty excited about it, but I'm going to save it till the end.
Sounds good.
All right, Greta.
Ready.
This
Yikes,
this show
guys,
is rife,
what is happening?
This episode is rife with gaffes and technical difficulties. So
it all started with the water bottle.
It's kind of this has kind of got some old school Tolkien Road vibes here. You know,
we're doing a throwback episode.
Man, going back to the early 100, first 100 episodes here with some of this stuff. All right, Greta.
Yeah.
Greddy.
Yeah, I'm Greddy.
Greddy, you ready?
Let's do it.
You ready to meet the peoples of Middle Earth? All right.
I think I already know them, but okay.
Well,
just saying.
There's a lot of them. Probably don't know all of them.
That's probably
in this
true.
Episode, we're surveying the peoples of Middle Earth, which is the 12th and final volume in the History of Middle Earth series.
Yeah, this has been a marathon. It's been a marathon. So this is like the 26th mile.
Yes.
Yep.
It felt a little bit like that when I was doing the notes for today. When I was doing the show notes for today, I was just...
It felt like you're on the 26th mile.
It was, and I was like...
Yeah.
Because I've got, you know, we've got a few episodes in the can that I can just like throw out and, you know, and being like, here's the latest episode. But I'm like, you know, so I was like, do I really, maybe we just want to wait and, you know, and I'm like, no, persevere, finish strong. All right.
Strong.
All right. So this volume was published in 1996. The Peoples of Middle-earth consists of four parts. Part 1 is titled The Prologue and Appendices to the Lord of the Rings. Part 2 is titled Late Writings. Part 3 is titled Teachings of Pengaloth. Part 4 is titled Unfinished Tales. So as with past episodes in this series, we'll give a brief overview of each part and look at some highlights, starting with Christopher's foreword. All right. So in the foreword, Christopher reflects back on the history of Middle-earth series. So remember, this is 1996, so he's been writing this thing for, you know, if you include Unfinished Tales, I mean, it's been close to, I think it's something like 16 or 17 years at that point.
Wow.
That he'd been working on this whole series. So that's a pretty large chunk of somebody's life to be working on one project. So in the foreword, he has a couple of interesting things to say. So this is the first thing. It is a long time since I began the work of ordering and elucidating the vast collection of papers in which my father's conception of Arda, Aman, and Middle-earth was contained, making not long after his death some first transcriptions from the Book of Lost Tales, of which I knew virtually nothing, as a step towards the understanding of the origins of the Silmarillion. I had little notion then of what lay before me, of all the unknown works crammed in disorder in that formidable array of battered box files. Nearly a quarter of a century later, the story, as I have been able to tell it, is at last concluded. So,
wow.
Yeah, so apparently he didn't really even know much about the Book of Lost Tales when he started, you know, so it's interesting. He kind of started there with his own pet project and then was like, oh, maybe I'll turn this into a book, right?
That's Which crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is.
It makes sense. I mean, it's not likely that, you know, later on in life, I mean, you know, the Book of Lost Tales was written before, I mean, Christopher was even born, I believe. And if any of it was still being written when he was alive, he was just a small child. So it wouldn't have been of any interest to him at that time. And by the time Christopher was interested in Middle Earth and the things of Middle Earth, I believe he was, you know, so much progress had been made that you were really on like the third or fourth volume at that point of, you know, of the stories of Middle Earth. So the Book of Lost Tales were kind of a long forgotten thing for his father. All right. He also claims that the series has not been exhaustive. This is not to say that I have given an account of everything that my father wrote, even leaving aside the great body of his work on the languages of the elves. My father's very late writings have been selectively presented, and much further detail, especially concerning names and the etymology of names, can be found in texts such as those that I excerpted in Unfinished Tales, notably in that part of the book entitled The History of Galadriel and Celeborn. Other omissions have arisen, almost one might say, from inadvertence as the work and its publication proceeded. So I just really find that exciting that there's, you know, that this has not been an exhaustive process. There's still plenty more writings out there, which we know because, you know, we got many other works after the History of Middle-earth mm-hmm. series. Mm-hmm. Plus we're getting the Nature of Middle-earth coming up soon, right?
Yes.
In September. So pretty exciting. Hopefully the Nature of Middle-earth doesn't exhaust everything either. So we'll just have to see. Although I will say, I saw an image of the deluxe edition, and it was like a 3D image of the deluxe edition of The Nature of Middle-earth. So it was like the really nice, like hardback version. And that bad boy looked thick. I'm just saying. So there's this looks like it could be a pretty voluminous work. So
it's exciting.
Yeah. All right. Christopher even calls the History of Middle-earth series a form of biography. He says, since the ceaseless making of his world extended from my father's youth into his old age, the History of Middle-earth, is in some sense also a record of his life, a form of biography, if of a very unusual kind. He had traveled a long road. He bequeathed to me a massive legacy of writings that made possible the tracing of that road, and as I hope, its true sequence, and the unearthing of the deep foundations that led ultimately to the true end of his great history, when the white ship departed from the gray havens. Yeah, so I just, I liked that. First of all, I thought it was a nice little tribute to his dad, and, you know, it's, how cool must have been, you know, in all of this for Christopher to, like, kind of have this record of his dad's mind, you know? And, you know, I not to make it about me, but I will just say personal testimony is having, you know, just lost my father a few months ago, as many of you know. You know, like to have had something like that, to just go back when he's gone and to be able to like just see this record of his thought, you know, in this intimate detail what a huge mm-hmm. blessing that would be, just on a personal level, regardless of the fandom that wants to see these things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
a special connection.
Absolutely.
It's like a piece of him is still here. You know, because not only are you reading what he wrote, but you're seeing his handwriting, too, because this was in the age before,
mm-hmm.
you know, typewriters, or maybe not typewriters, but computers and stuff. So a lot of it was handwritten. All of it was probably handwritten, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, he would have typewritten a lot of stuff, too, but like, oh. but
well,
he
still has some handwritten stuff.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just thinking, like, it's kind of like, you know, it was his dad's tree, or you know, his leaf, right,
mm-hmm.
by Niggle, right,
mm-hmm.
That he's able to leave there, and but instead of just getting the leaf in this case, he's got like the whole forest of stuff, you know, so to get lost in. So, I'm sure for a lot of us going through these certain things, this is a very challenging series, and it's hard to find the nuggets in it. But I'm sure for Christopher, It was hard work, but it was very worthwhile on a personal level,
definitely.
You know, to be able to just have the time and know I can spend my time going through all of my dad's writings, and I'm going to, you know, my time doing that is going to pay for itself. Right.
Oh, for and then some.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Because this series is going to be in every bookstore around the world, and it's going to sell
people
a lot of copies
wanna,
just based on the name on the spine, you know?
Yep.
So
time well spent.
Yeah. Anyway, but I also just like the notion of Christopher referring to this as his dad's road, because we're the Tolkien Road,
Tolkien Road.
So I feel like we kind of seeing mind meld, a little bit of a mind meld there with Christopher, which I'm happy with. So cool stuff.
Same. So I'm happy with that too.
Nice.
Yep.
I'm glad that we're both happy.
We're both happy.
I'm happy that we're both happy.
I am too.
Well, we're both happy that we're both happy. That's fantastic.
No, it is fantastic.
Okay, let's look at some various parts. I'm sorry, I cut you off with the very last word, but yes.
That's okay. You don't have to apologize.
Okay, all right.
It's fine. I'm not hurt.
You don't have to apologize because I'll make you pay later.
Oh, man.
All right, okay, let's look at the various parts. Part one is the prologue and appendices to The Lord of the Rings. All right, so this part consists of the following subparts. Chapter 1, the prologue. Chapter 2, the appendix on languages. Chapter 3, the family trees. Chapter 4, the calendars. Chapter 5, the history of the Akalabeth. Chapter 6, the tale of years of the Second Age. Chapter 7, the heirs of Elendil. Chapter 8, the tale of years of the Third Age. And Chapter 9, the making of Appendix A, which includes all of the parts in Appendix A. So, I mean, this is pretty straightforward, right? We're looking at the development of all of the material that's not just the story of Lord of the Rings, but it's all the appendices and then the prologue, right, that comes before it, right? So Christopher goes in. He talks about how he didn't really get a chance to cover that when he was doing the history of the Lord of the Rings, those four volumes. And so he's taking the time now to go back and cover that ground. So, that's what this looks at. Christopher himself has this to say. The development of Appendix B, the Tale of Years, was naturally associated with and dependent on that of Appendix A, which as published bears the title Annals of the Kings and Rulers. But more unexpectedly, the Tale of Years of the Second Age was closely associated with the evolution of the history of Numenor and of the Akalabeth. In the presentation of the early forms of these appendices, I have found after trial and error that the best course is to divide the tale of years into two parts, the second and the third ages, and to treat them separately. And also, to introduce at this point an account of the Akalabaith, followed by the tale of years of the second age in chapter 6. So that's an important point, of course, is that Akalabaith was not part of Lord of the Rings in any way, but Christopher includes it here as something he hasn't really gotten to yet and was maybe had something to do with the development of the appendices as well. Of the tale of years of the third age, we find several interesting differences, and I'm just going to note a few here. So one interesting example is that Gollum was originally thought to be 1900 years old by Tolkien. All right, so if you'll recall from the actual appendices, the timeline is more like, you know, he's more like 400 and or he's around 500 years old in round numbers, right? Is what we've eventually settled on. But originally, Tolkien was thinking he's like 1900 years old because he notes in the original Tale of the Years, he notes, Daigle finds the ring about 1100 years after Isildur's death. Gollum therefore had the ring for about 1900 years, right? So Gollum...
Well, he would have been older than 1900, right? Because he didn't find the ring.
Roughly 1900 years.
Well, how old was he when he found the ring?
Well, he was a hobbit of normal age, you know, of normal age, right? So okay. He wouldn't have been more than like 100, you know, probably okay. Much younger.
So no more than 2000, I guess, total.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So.
Still old.
Yeah.
Still very old.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, 500 is still old, but it's not as old as 1900.
So in the actual book, what was decided on was 500. Is that
roughly,
right?
Roughly, yeah.
So remind me, hobbits... average eight lifespan is what?
Well, Bilbo, of course, lived a little bit longer.
Yeah, because he went to the Grey Havens,
he was, you know, 100. He's 111 at the beginning of Lord of the Rings,
right?
And then lives on to help. You know, we don't know how long, but he's pretty. He starts aging very rapidly after he gets rid of the ring, or after he gives the ring to Frodo.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So it would have been the ring that preserved Gollum that long.
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, excuse me while I clear my throat. All right. Yeah, so there's that. And then also the Tale of Years as laid out here gives a lot more info, especially in certain aspects. For example, while in the finished version we find two short sentences about the arrival of the Istari, the wizards, in 1100, here we find the following. About this time, the Istari, that is, the wise men or wizards, appeared in the westlands of Middle-earth. So this is circa 1000 Third Age. It was not known whence they came, unless to Círdan and Elrond. But afterwards, when it was revealed that the shadow of Sauron had first begun to take new shape at this same time, it was said by many that they came out of the far west, and were messengers sent to contest the power of Sauron, if he should arise again, and to move all good folk and kindly creatures to resist him. The wizards appeared nonetheless in the likeness of men, and resembled men in most things, save that they were never young and aged, but slowly and had many powers of mind and hand. Oh, I'm sorry. Save that they were never young and aged but slowly, and had many powers of mind and hand. For long they journeyed far and wide among elves and men and all speaking folk, and held converse also with beasts and birds. They did not reveal their true names, but used those that the peoples of Middle-earth gave to them. And they were many. The chief of this order were the two whom the Eldar called Mithrandir and Curanir, but men in the north named Gandalf and Saruman. Of them, Mithrandir was closest in counsel with the Eldar and with Elrond. He wandered far in the north and west and never made for himself any lasting abode. But Curanir journeyed often far into the east, and when he returned, he dwelt at Orthanc in the Ring of Isengard. So, and then there's actually a section on the Perianath too, like where they came from, and it's really interesting. So, yeah, this Tale of Years, a lot more detail in it than the one we finally got where, you know, for example, the Istari, their arrival is only like two sentences. So some interesting stuff here for sure. I kind of wonder why it got edited out, but maybe he used it in other parts that I'm not thinking of. So there you go. That's part one. Fascinating details on the Lord of the Rings appendices. So if you're an appendices kind of person, that's where you want to go. Part two is titled Late Writings. The contents here are as follows. of Dwarves and Men is chapter 10. Chapter 11 is The Shibboleth of Fëanor. Chapter 12 is The Problem of Rhos. And chapter 13 is titled Last Writings. And there's a couple of different short writings in there. These are essentially essays that Tolkien wrote later in life. Of Dwarves and Men is something of a history of the early dwarves and men and of their relations with one another.
Hmm.
Let's see. So,
like the dwarves' relationship with men.
With men, right.
Yeah.
Here's a little excerpt from it. It was long before the Longbeards, who were a group of dwarves, felt any need to learn the language of their neighbors, and still less to adopt names by which they could be known individually to outsiders. This process began not in barter and trade, but in war. For the Longbeards had spread southward down the vales of Anduin and had made their chief mansion and stronghold at Moria, and also eastward to the Iron Hills, where the mines were their chief source of iron ore. They regarded the Iron Hills, the arid Mithrin, and the east dales of the Misty Mountains as their own land. But they were under attack from the orcs of Morgoth. During the War of the Jewels and the Siege of Angband, when Morgoth needed all his strength, these attacks ceased. But when Morgoth fell and Angband was destroyed, hosts of the orcs fled eastward seeking homes. They were now masterless and without any general leadership, but they were well-armed and very numerous, cruel, savage, and reckless in assault. In the battles that followed, the dwarves were outnumbered, and though they were the most redoubtable warriors of all the speaking peoples, they were glad to make alliance with men. So there you go.
Okay.
So lots, you know, pretty long essay, actually. So interesting stuff for... And there was several other interesting passages that I'm not going to read, but just concerning, like, the origins and, like, kind of the mysterious nature of the origins of the dwarves and of men, and maybe some answers to some questions, right, that you might have. All right, the next part, the next chapter of part two is of the Shibboleth of Fëanor. Christopher explains as follows. The most remarkable example of this is the following essay arising from his consideration of a problem of historical phonology, which records how the difference in pronunciation of a single consonantal element in Quenya played a significant part in the strife of the Noldoran princes in Valinor. It has no title, but I have called it the Shibboleth of Fëanor, since my father himself used that word in the source of the essay, in the course of the essay. Yeah. So, Greta, do you know what a shibboleth is?
You know, the word is vaguely familiar to me, but I can't remember what it is.
I actually did know this because I just heard it a long time ago. But it's actually a biblical term. Mm. So a shibboleth. Going to Wikipedia here. Here it is. The term originates from the Hebrew word shibboleth, which means the part of a plant containing grain, such as the head of a stalk of wheat or rye, or less commonly, but arguably most appositely, flood torrent. So you're thinking to yourself, wait, Fëanor was into agriculture? No. The modern use derives from an account in the Hebrew Bible in which pronunciation of this word was used to distinguish Ephraimites, whose dialect used a differently sounding first consonant. The difference concerns the Hebrew letter Shin, which is now pronounced as, I won't even bother with that. In the book of Judges, chapter 12, after the inhabitants of Gilead, under the command of Jephthah, inflicted a military defeat upon the invading tribe of Ephraim, the surviving Ephraimites tried to cross the River Jordan back into their home territory, but the Gileadites secured the river's fords to stop them. To identify and kill these Ephraimites, the Gileadites told each suspected survivor to say the word Shibboleth. The Ephraimite dialect resulted in a pronunciation that, to Gileadites, sounded like shibboleth, or sibboleth. So, the idea here is that there's a word, and different groups of people pronounce it differently, and it serves as kind of a password, mm-hmm. right, or a way of identifying where someone is from. So, in my case, being from Louisville, Kentucky, right, whenever I tell people that I'm from Louisville, some people look at me weird, like, where are you from? And then, you know, and I'm like, oh, Louisville, right? You know, but if you are from Louisville and you hear somebody who claims to be from Louisville say they're from Louisville, you're like, you're not from Louisville, right?
You're not even from Louisville.
Yeah, right? So, goodness gracious.
Sorry.
All right. Blown out of your drums today.
It was your idea.
I know, because it's a big metal flask and it's going to make a bunch of noise on the desk,
too. I'll be very careful.
Just like you. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's the idea of a shibboleth. So this is, you know, I would call it a philological essay, but, you know, it's a, you know, it's it's written in terms that are going to be more interesting than just a dry philological, academic philological essay for us Tolkien fans.
More interesting, you said.
Right. Oh, yeah, okay. Because it's written, you know, it's about the history of Middle Earth, right?
Right. Okay. Gotcha.
So, and then the next part is The Problem of Rhos. It's another linguistic essay. So this basically talks about the part of the name Elros and how it's also in the name Methros and certain other names. And it talks about a problem that Tolkien had with the etymology of that. So again, linguistic essay, probably more interesting than your average linguistic essay for us Tolkien fans, but maybe not the first thing I'm going to go. It might be a few hundred more episodes before I get to The Problem of Rhos. So, or maybe not. We'll see. And then Last Writings consists of a small collection of late manuscripts. We get writings on Glorfindel, Círdan, and perhaps most interesting, the Five Wizards.
Mm.
And, this is really cool, we get different names and really interesting info for the Blue Wizards. All right. So the mysterious Blue Wizards, right? The wizards we know like little to nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
Check this out. The other two came much earlier, meaning the Blue Wizards. So this is Tolkien in a note, right, saying this. The other two came much earlier, at the same time probably as Glorfindel, when matters became very dangerous in the Second Age. In the Second Age, Glorfindel was sent to aid Elrond and was, though not yet said, preeminent in the War of Eriador. But the other two Istari were sent for a different purpose. Morinetar and Ro-Mestamo, Darkness Slayer and East Helper. Their task was to circumvent Sauron, to bring help to the few tribes of men that had rebelled from Melkor worship, to stir up rebellion. And after his first fall, to search out his hiding, in which they failed, and to cause a dissension and disarray among the Dark East. They must have had very great influence on the history of the Second Age and Third Age in weakening and disarraying the forces of East. Who would both in the Second Age and Third Age otherwise have outnumbered the West? Whoa. And I remember hearing a rumor about this a few months ago, and I don't know if anything's been confirmed. I don't believe it has, but there's been a rumor floating around for some time that the Blue Wizards are going to be a part of the Second Age, the Lotron Prime. Now, for some people, when you hear that, you're like, wait a minute, that's like, you can't do that. Or can you? Apparently, Tolkien himself said that they came in the Second Age. So, wow.
Yeah.
We might get the Blue Wizards and Lotron Prime.
That would be kind of cool.
That would be very cool. I mean, let's be honest. There's hobbits. We all love hobbits. And so that's a big draw for Tolkien. And then there's Gandalf. And if you can't have Gandalf, you need to have some wizards, right? I mean, they're a huge draw.
Yeah.
So
they're so cool.
Very much so. So, yeah. But I love that. They're Darkness Slayer and East Helper.
I know. I like that. I like Darkness Slayer.
Yeah.
It's cool.
I definitely want to get Morinetar in there, right? Darkness Slayer. That would be very cool.
That would be.
All right. So, and I think we'll probably get to the Glorfindel and Círdan chapters probably sooner rather than later. Those sound really interesting. I'd love to just kind of do an exploration of both of those characters, everything we know about both of those characters. So, it really sounds like Tolkien was spending the last years of his life delving into some of the major outstanding mysteries, you know. Wish he could have stuck around for a few more years. So, anyway. Part 3 is titled Teachings of Pengoloth. And so this is, the title of it is actually Dangveth Pengoloth, and it's subtitled as follows. Dangveth Pengoloth, the answer of Pengolod to Elfwine, who asked him how came it that the tongues of the elves changed and were sundered. All right, so another, sounding like another philological lesson. I mean, this guy loved language, in case you hadn't already noticed.
Right, yeah.
He loved everything about language. So there's a little excerpt from this. But to the changefulness of Ea, to weariness of the unchanged, to the renewing of the union, to these three, which are one, the Eldar are also subject in their degree. In this, however, they differ from men, that they are ever more aware of the words that they speak. As a silversmith may remain more aware than others of the tools and vessels that he uses daily at his table, or a weaver of the texture of his garments. Yet this makes rather for change among the Eldar than for steadfastness, for the Eldar, being skilled and eager in art, will readily make things new, both for delight to look on, or to hear, or to feel, or for daily use, be it in vessels, or raiment, or in speech. So I just want to again remark, like, you know, this is not your average academic essay on linguistics, right? This is somebody who maybe one of the greatest linguists in the history of mankind, right? And writing passionately about language in a creative way, right? But in a way that's meant to inform and to explain, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And we have to remember that Middle Earth is a product of his love of language at the end of the day, too.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, you really can't just dismiss these philological, and I've tried not to. I've tried to admit that it's probably not going to be like the, you know, something I get to very soon, but I'm very much a person that would love if there was like a simple app that could teach you, the languages of Tolkien. Mm. I would learn that over, you know, Spanish or German or, you know, French or any of those languages any day. I'm just like, I would love to learn, like, if there was an easier way for me to learn them, because I'm not going to be able to sit down and like look at a book and learn them that way.
Right.
Because I would love to, you know, be more knowledgeable on Tolkien's languages. So, but anyway, he at least writes about it in a way that's engaging and not just a dry sort of academic discourse. So,
yeah. I thought one of his languages was in Duolingo.
Nope.
Wasn't one of the elven languages?
No, Klingon is in Duolingo.
Oh, maybe that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I think there are some other created languages, but I looked at the possibility when I was learning some Spanish on Duolingo maybe a year and a half ago. I was like, they really need, when's like Elvish or Quenyan or Sindarin coming to, coming to Duolingo? And basically I researched it, and it was like, you couldn't really do that the same way you do with other languages, because it's not a complete, it's really not a completely constructed language. It was something he never really finished in his lifetime, like many things.
Yeah.
Tolkien, left unfinished many more things than he finished, which is probably true of any of us at the end of the day, how our lives are going to end. So
that's probably true.
All right. And then there's also a short essay in this chapter on limbus. Yummy.
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 Yummy limbus.
And a recipe. Tolkien's own recipe for limbus. No, just kidding.
I thought you were serious.
I couldn't help myself. Sorry.
It's okay. Actually, it's not okay.
Oh. No. Okay.
Watch out.
I'm always watching out after we're done.
You know, I think Caitlin has a recipe.
I think she does.
Really good.
Yeah. Right on. All right. Finally, in part four, we get two more unfinished tales.
Oh.
The first is The New Shadow, which I could have sworn we covered on a past episode, but I was unable to find a record of it. So we may need to remedy that soon, because The New Shadow was Tolkien's abandoned attempt at a sequel, a fourth age story, right? So he wrote a little kind of bit of a sequel to Lord of the Rings after he wrote Lord of the Rings, but never quite completed it, unfortunately. As Christopher tells in his biography, Humphrey Carpenter stated that in 1965, my father found a typescript of The New Shadow, a sequel to The Lord of the Rings, which he had begun a long time ago, but had abandoned after a few pages. He sat up till 4 a.m. reading it and thinking about it. I do not know the source of this statement, but further evidence is provided by a used envelope postmarked 8th January 1968, on the back of which my father scribbled a passage concerning Borlas, developing further the account of his circumstances at the time of the opening of the story. This is certain evidence that he was still concerned with The New Shadow as late as 1968, and since the passage roughed out here would follow on from the point reached in the typescript C, it seems very likely that C dates from this time. So there you go. So that's what The New Shadow is, something I think, unless somebody can point out that we actually did do that before. I mean, we don't.
Sounds very familiar.
It does. I feel like we talked about it, but I don't know. Maybe we just didn't like go into a big discussion, because I mean, we did many episodes on Lord of the Rings, obviously.
Yeah.
So I just thought we had done it as like, you know, here's what the sequel might have been, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we may not have delved into it, you know, in depth. Hmm. So there you go.
All right.
I think it probably deserves a standalone episode before too long. All right. And then the second work here is Tar Elmar. Tolkien himself summarized the story like so. Beginnings of a tale that sees the Numenoreans from the point of view of the wild men. It was begun without much consideration of geography or the situation as envisaged in The Lord of the Rings. But either it must remain as a separate tale only vaguely linked with the developed Lord of the Rings history, or, and I think so, it must recount the coming of the Numenoreans before the downfall and represent their choice of permanent havens. So the geography must be made to fit that of the mouths of Anduin and the Langstrad. So another one I think probably be good to visit sooner rather than later, if for nothing else, because it also gives us the flavor of the Second Age, much like the Mariner's Wife did. And also it gives it from a different perspective, right? It's going to give it from a perspective of different people than the Numenoreans. So that's interesting.
Yeah, that would be very interesting.
All right, Greta, we did it.
We
surveyed the history of Middle Earth and survived the history of Middle Earth.
I feel like we should mostly say you did it.
Yeah, well.
Because I just sat here for a lot of it.
Yeah, well.
And said things like, absolutely.
Moral support. Boom.
Yes. Good.
Nice.
Well done.
I appreciate the moral support.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, what do we do now? So for starters, I need to go through my notes from these and organize them into individual sections, which we will cover on future episodes. So meaning like pick out the good stuff, right? Pick out the really interesting stuff. Yeah. I'm also going to have to remember to keep the History of Middle Earth Index handy, because that's like the 13th volume. And it's just an index of the entire series. And so it's going to be useful to go back and when I'm researching things in the future and be like, okay, what did Tolkien have to say about this topic? But there's a lot of really fascinating stuff to go deep in. I mean, there was several episodes worth just in this chapter, in this volume alone. And I can remember earmarking certain things and on the past 11 volumes and saying, we really need to get into that. Not to mention Unfinished Tales, which we kind of did at the beginning of this episode as sort of part of the After the Silmarillion, Where Do We Go? And then there's, you know, the other books, The Children of Húrin, Beren and Lúthien, The Fall of Gondolin, which are longer versions of those tales, and also go into the history of those tales. So there's just, you know, there ain't no end to the Tolkien Road in sight. Overall, I think we're going to be jumping around a lot for the foreseeable future, kind of unfocused after, you know, we spent a lot of time kind of climbing this mountain. You know, it's been a very daunting task, and I just want to kind of, I feel like we've learned so much, and I want to just kind of like, I want to enjoy the view for a while, you know?
That's a good analogy.
You know, there's a lot of like just lore I want to get into, or just interesting individual topics. I feel like this has really expanded my view of Tolkien's universe, and I hope it has for you all as well. So, but as always, we'd love to hear your ideas as well. And you know, if there's people that you think would be interesting for us to interview, reach out to us, let us know. We got some interviews coming up soon, so some interesting ones. Which I know you guys are going to enjoy, so stick around. Let's talk about this news, the War of the Rohirrim, right? So this dropped on Friday, last Friday. I'm just really excited about this. I'll read a little snippet of this article from Yahoo Entertainment, which David Bigwood forwarded to me. It's all over the place. You know, this news is all over the place. So this article says, the Tolkien franchise is heading back to the big screen in a fresh new line in Warner Animation anime title, The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim. I'm told that Oscar-winning feature architects Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh are not involved with the project as we speak, but that will be determined down the road. But Philippa Boyens, who was one of the screenwriters for Lord of the Rings, will be part of it. And it's directed by Kenji Kamiyama, who I'm not familiar with any of his work, but is a well-known kind of anime producer and director. So first thing, this is animated. This is going to be animated, which, as you guys know from having listened to this podcast, I'm all for, right? I am very excited about that. I would love it someday to see like a big budget animated version of The Lord of the Rings that's just complete, and The Hobbit, that are just completely faithful to the text. Like, it's just almost like, you know, mini series, like, you know, just animated version. I think Tolkien himself was so into like the artistic and the visual side of his, you know, universe, that I think it's completely appropriate to dive into animation. I'm a fan of doing both live action and animation, so this is very exciting to me. It's not, I'm assuming we're going to get it probably within the next year, because I know we're going to want to, they're going to want to capitalize on the excitement around the Tron Prime.
Yeah,
for sure. Mm-hmm. So, and, as far as what the story is going to be focusing on, it's going to be focusing on the story of Helm Hammerhand, right? Who was, the king of Rohan. He was one of the kings of Rohan, and he was, I mean, he's basically whom Helm's Deep is named after, right? So, very interesting figure. Maybe when you read a story, and I think we're going to do an episode on him for in the not too distant future. He's not necessarily all good, right? He's not. Mm. He's not like what you think of when
he's
you think
complicated.
Of when you think of the other, like when you think of the Rohirrim in the time of the Lord of the Rings. He did some things that were pretty questionable. So, you know, but at the same time, he's also a heroic figure in the history of Rohan. So
those are my favorite type of characters.
Well, he may be a little bit of an anti-hero. There you go.
I like anti-heroes.
So, all right. So that's, you know, I'm pretty excited about this. Mm-hmm. I will definitely have a lot more to say. And if you want to hear the 10 things that I think you need to know, like right now, head on over to YouTube and check out my video over there on it. So look for the Tolkien Road channel and then you'll find the video. So, but yeah, Greta, what do you think about this?
I'm excited.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool. And I think that, especially the being animated, I think that adds an extra layer of intrigue mm-hmm. for me. Cause, the only animated thing I've seen so far was that Hobbit that was done many years ago. So I'm excited, and it's cool too that it's, you know, a lesser known,
mm-hmm.
you know, I like that they're not just trying to like remake. I mean, not that I would be opposed to them, like just remaking the trilogy in animated form at some point, but I like that they're expanding everybody's knowledge of Tolkien's world mm-hmm. and the stories that he wrote. And I think it's going to be a nice little, you know, way to get people ready for the Lord of the Latron Prime series.
It makes me think about, one thing to note is that this is being done by New Line Cinema, which is who gave us the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit films, Jackson's films, right? Of course, Latron Prime is not being done by New Line Cinema. It's being done by Amazon Studios. So this makes me think, this is kind of like what happened with Spider-Man, where he's a Marvel, like, IP, but the rights to him were owned by Sony. So there was this he couldn't appear in like the Marvel Cinematic Universe for a while until they worked out a deal where basically Sony kept the rights, but they worked out a deal with Marvel to allow the movies to allow him to appear in the Marvel mm-hmm. movies, and they kind of cross-branded, you know, the movies. So the two studios kind of found a mutually beneficial way of doing things, but then also Sony made the awesome animated film, the Spider-Man. What was it called?
Into the Spider-Verse.
Into the Spider-Verse. That mm-hmm. that movie is awesome. I love that movie. It may be my favorite Spider-Man movie, quite honestly. And part of it's the animation. The animation is so good. So I'm like, oh man, if this is kind of if New Line is saying, okay, we own this property, so if Amazon can tell stories in the second age, why aren't we telling more stories in the third age? Right. Mm. I'm just like, yeah, exactly. Mm. Right.
Good point.
Yeah. And do it animated, right? That'll be awesome.
It will be awesome. I think it's going to make Tolkien a little, you know, accessible to an audience that maybe would not have been interested or able to watch a real life action
yeah.
film.
I mean, you're talking 3,000 years of history before Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. You could do, and here's the thing, because it's New Line, they can basically use all of the same, like, kind of the aesthetics of the Jackson films, which, I mean, the aesthetics of the Jackson films are fantastic, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Like, they can use all that. They can use the music, right? And, you know, not that they won't want to make new music, but kind of use those musical ideas. Mm. I mean, they got 3,000 years of stories to tell, right? They can tell the War of the Rohirrim. They can tell they can tell all kinds of stories about Aragorn. I mean, in theory, they could tell stories beyond the third age, you know, they could try and do their, take their, take a shot at telling sequels. So I don't know. This is really exciting news, y'all, in my opinion. It's just, it's a very exciting time to be a Tolkien fan. And I think the only big question that remains for us is like, okay, New Line has the third age, Amazon has the second age. So who gets the first age? And I'm thinking that it's probably going to be that if Amazon is successful with the second age, then they're going to get the first age as well. So I mean, I'm just, I can't wait, y'all. It's like, would you hurry up already and just release these things? But the build up is going to be super fun too. So just, you know, as news really starts getting released, which I've heard, I saw some stuff over on Twitter, and it looks like it's there's a Twitter account. I got to credit to him. Twitter account, Fellowship of Fans. I think it's also a YouTube channel that somehow got hold of like some kind of marketing plan from Amazon Studios, and it it sounds like we're gonna start hearing a lot like towards the end of this year.
Oh, so, yeah, all
right. It was like very detailed. Like, you know, we're gonna production needs to be finalized on the first season, completely done by this date. And then we're going to start releasing teasers and trailers and all these kinds of things. So
lots of good stuff man. To come.
Yeah. Stay tuned. All right. So we talked a lot about, we had a lot of news just talked about. So, you know, that's that. And then we're going to, I think we're going to hold off on any more correspondence, except I will mention this. Because you brought up college baseball a couple of episodes ago, Greta, that we were, you know, into some college baseball right
yes,
now.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And we had a note from one of our patrons, Jonathan D. And Jonathan said, 100% agree about the greatness of college baseball. Go Tigers, right? Dude. And so that's the G-A-U-X go. That's the Cajun go, right?
That's how you know that Jonathan LSU fan right knows now, what right he's... He's legit.
It's a shibboleth.
It's a shibboleth. That's what I was going to say.
It's a written shibboleth.
Yeah, it is a written shibboleth. You know yeah. that he's a legit LSU fan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Jonathan, I just have to say, it's for two people who live in Tennessee. We're not really Tennessee fans, but sorry.
Yeah. That's right. I forgot that LSU wasn't in it anymore.
Yeah, Tennessee beat LSU.
Yeah. So. Well, it was good. They put up a fight.
Our neighbor's a huge Tennessee fan, so we'll go egg his house for you. Because you're our patron.
But actually, we won't, because he gives us homemade beer and it's delicious.
And he's a really good guy.
And he is a really nice guy.
And they've had a lot of difficult... The Tennessee's had a lot of difficulty
it's
in their
nice
other
It's nice to
programs.
See Tennessee succeeding at something. Yeah. It really is. But yeah. I feel for you, Jonathan. I really do.
Jonathan, awesome to hear from
we're,
you.
We're Orioles fans, so we get it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's sad.
I think LSU season is better. Was right way now. Better than the Orioles has been so far. So,
oh, Ben McDonald, commentator for the Orioles and former
yes.
LSU player. Yeah,
that's correct. Mm-hmm. Wow, I like how you linked that all up.
All right,
good stuff. Thanks for the note, Jonathan.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan.
And the College World Series starts Friday. So
Saturday.
Oh, you told me Friday.
Yeah, I was wrong. It's Saturday, but then it goes for like 10 days.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, that'll be exciting.
Yes, indeed. All right. Thanks for watching, everybody. We'd love to hear from you. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, TolkienRoad.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, etc. Yeah, and then that's all for this episode. Thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following. Lise U.
Andrew T.
John R.
Ms. Anonymous.
Caitlin of T with Tolkien.
Shannon S.
Brian O.
Emilio P.
Zeke F.
James A.
James L.
Chris L.
Chuck F.
Azia V.
Ish of the Hammer.
Teresa C.
David of Pints with Jack.
Jonathan D.
Eric S.
Joey S.
Eric B.
Johanna T.
Mike M.
Robert H.
Paul D.
Ren Julia.
As well as those celebrating their patron anniversary in June, Teresa C.
and James L.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you to all of our patrons and to all of our listeners, and we will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.